Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
I think the most important thing in starting a business is belief. You know, you've got to believe in yourself, firstly, and you've got to believe and be passionate about what you want to do. Because, you know, when you talk to somebody passionately about what you believe in, it's the easiest thing. You know, people are addicted to that. You know, it's easy to sell something, you know, as an example, if you're passionate about it, because you believe it, right? And that's addictive. People, you know, people want to believe. So believing in yourself and believing in what you want to do, you know, are the most important things, I think.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Jeffrey Madoff of Madoff Productions and mindset coach Linda M. Perry, then do check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. Because today I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Adrian Sester. Adrian is the founder and CEO of the Australian Organic Food Company and also Flavour Makers, a leading food manufacturing company here in Australia. Alongside hundreds of brands they bring to the market for clients, including Coles and Woolworths, the biggest supermarkets in Australia, Adrian is pioneering the organic food movement through his commercial enterprises and networks. In addition to Flavour Makers, which has over 200 employees, Adrian also has an Italian vineyard, a cider brand, and a number of other businesses. In our discussion today, Adrian talked to me about the opportunities available to organically farmed produce. We talked about the education process required when establishing a new market or approach to market, and also understanding the patterns and building blocks in your industry. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Adrian Sester. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, for a change from very close to where I am, from Melbourne, Australia, Adrian Sester, who's the founder of the Australian Organic Food Company, and they work with Australian farmers to grow organic produce. Now, Adrian also has lots of other businesses, so we might touch on those later on. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Adrian. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, thank you for the invitation, you.
Michael Simonetti, who was our guest on episode 238 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we get in touch with you and have a conversation. So big hello to Michael.
G'day, Mike. Thanks, mate.
Now, as I mentioned, you've got lots of businesses. You've got Flavour Makers that are a leading food manufacturing company in Australia. You've been a pioneer in the organic food movement. And you've got heaps of other companies. What is it that drives you on kind of particularly around organic food?
The organic space is something that my family's been in the industry for 30 years, maybe longer, 40, 50 years actually. And the organic space is something that I didn't really know a great deal about until I was asked to develop a private label baby food program for Coles supermarkets in Australia. And when I started to look into it into more detail, I realized how little infrastructure there was in the Australian organic farming industry. And then realized that most of the organic, you know, baby food products that were being sold in Australia were coming out of from Chinese grown organic vegetables and fruit. And that sort of, you know, set me off on a pathway that I never expected at the time was going to happen. But I started to uncover that, you know, there were so many things that needed to be done with the Australian organic farming industry. And that's effectively what led me to start the whole thing.
Mm. Okay, so give us a little bit of an education then on organic, because I think, you know, we hear this in the news media, organic, and, well, I guess there's lots of information around that, some of which is probably incomplete, maybe even inaccurate. So give us a bit of a background of what's your understanding of organic and what are all the things that are involved?
Principally, you know, products that are organically grown have to be grown without pesticides and herbicides. And typically, organic farming is also about resting fields and rotating crops and effectively bringing nutrition to the soil, because it's all, you know, everything that's grown in soil obviously, you know, derives its nutrition from soil. So it's important to manage the soil health in order to get the best organic products and produce. So I guess the most, you know, the two key things are that there are no herbicides and pesticides used while growing organically. They're the most important things.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading, and I can't remember the number now, but that Australia had the largest area of organic farming in the world. Is that right?
Actually, it's, you know, Australia has 63% of the world's organic certified land. Which is a pretty incredible number. Obviously, a big part of that is cattle farming, and it's a fairly big country, clearly. So it's easy to certify land that's never been touched. But yeah, it's an interesting fact, and it's something that we should be proud of.
Hmm. All right. And how did you go about getting involved in the organic food business then? Well, tell us what you do, first of all, at the organic food company, because I know it's more than just producing organic food.
Well, it's, you know, Australian Organic Food Company is a subsidiary of Flavour Makers, and Flavour Makers is a food manufacturing business in Melbourne, Australia, and we own our own brands, but we also are a B2B business as well. We develop bespoke products for food manufacturers, but the Australian Organic Food Company is a brand that's owned by Flavour Makers and Australian Organic Farmers. So the intention with the Australian Organic Food Company was to build a brand that supports the Australian organic farming industry by being, you know, by having certain rules. And, you know, the rules, you know, I say the rules, but there's one rule, and that is that effectively everything that we make has to be made from organic produce that's grown only in Australia. And the reason I started this was because it dawned on me, or became apparent, that most of the organic products that are sold in Australia are not necessarily using Australian organic produce. Effectively, the way the organic rules are, and there's nothing wrong with this, but, you know, you can, as long as the products are certified organic, let's say the raw materials are certified organic, you can put them in a product and you can claim it to be organic. And that's wonderful, except if, you know, if 95% of the organic produce is coming from countries with dubious organic protocols, I guess, is the politically correct way of putting it. So, you know, what I discovered was there's a lot of product on the Australian supermarket shelves that was being made with organic produce coming out of countries that, if the public knew, if the consumer knew, they'd be, horrified, disappointed. And I thought, this has got to change. You know, here we are sitting in this clean, green country, which, you know, globally, you know, we have this perception about Australia that we're clean and green. And here we are feeding our, you know, babies, or our children in this instance, products that are possibly organic. And that, you know, set up for me, a set of events for me that you know, made me feel very uncomfortable. Basically, that I was in an industry where products that were being sold to consumers were, where the consumers were not aware of what was in those products and where they were coming from. And I thought that that had to change and we needed to do something to change it, you know. And it was one of those moments where, you know, you have those conversations in your head, Jürgen, where you, you say to yourself, oh, you know, something, this has got to change, but you don't have any time, Adrian, but something's got to change, but you don't have any time, Adrian, but this has got to change. And effectively, I sat bolt upright next to my wife one morning and in the middle of the night, rather, and I said, Caroline, I've got to do something about this. I can't, now that I'm awake and I'm aware of what's going on, I've got to change it, you know. And I think that my business, our business, Flavor Makers, is uniquely placed, rather, to be able to affect that change. So that's sort of where the whole thing started. It's been the hardest thing I've ever done, and it still remains the hardest thing that I'm doing, quite frankly.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So what are some of the challenges that you're facing there?
Well, first of all, you know, Australia has the highest cost of labour in the world. So, you know, we compete against countries where the labour cost, you know, look at factory worker in Australia cost, you know, and not just a factory worker, but, you know, people that are, you know, pickers and you know, at farm level, Australia's, you know, labour costs are about, you know, let's call it $23 an hour average. And then you add all the on costs. We are the highest labour cost in the world. You know, higher than Germany, and we don't make BMWs or Mercedes-Benz, if you understand what I mean. So that's a huge challenge right there, because when you're organic farming, there's a lot more labour involved in weeding and, you know, and picking and in maintaining the farms, you know, in good condition when you can't use pesticides and herbicides, right? And then on top of that, because we have such an expensive, you know, because we have such expensive labour, there's no real infrastructure that's been built in the organic farming industry to, you know, to take the vegetables or the fruit or those primary products to the next level, which is, you know, cleaning, peeling, dicing, pureeing, juicing, etc. So the whole supply chain, whilst there are farms and there are farmers, there wasn't really a supply chain infrastructure that I could rely on to get products that we needed to make 100% Australian organic products, if you understand what I mean.
Mm.
So that's been one of the big challenges, is having to actually, from the grassroots, from grassroots level, you know, build that infrastructure.
Yeah. So you've brought together lots of farmers that are certified organic, and you're basically creating a movement to address some of these issues to the point where I guess people are supportive of locally produced organic foods.
Yeah, I hope so. That's the goal. You know, I look at the Australian Organic Food Company as my pro bono moment. Jürgen, it's not like something, I mean, business has to be, for it to be sustainable, needs to be profitable. But in this instance, I'm not worried about how much this business makes. I'm more interested in trying to do something for the organic farming industry so that I can look at my children and say, you know, we didn't just take, we try to give back as well. Mm. And that's, you know, using the knowledge that I guess I've learned over my, you know, 30 odd years of the food industry to help that, so, you know, I was going to say embryonic organic farming industry, but it's not embryonic. It's well developed, but to take it to that next level, to teach them how to value add, to teach them how to get a little bit more for their carrots than what they're currently getting, and make these businesses more sustainable, but also to encourage more conventional farmers to move to organic farming, because I really do believe that that's the future and could be a big part of Australia's future. I often say that, you know, we rode on the sheep's back once, we could ride on the organic sheep once more, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just going to say that there's a big opportunity there, isn't there, with sort of over 60% of the world certified organic. And I guess the opportunity there is have kind of premium organic food grown in Australia, where it's such a large part of the agricultural landscape.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's crazy. Yeah, 63% of the world's certified organic farming land is in Australia. It's something that we, you know, most people wouldn't know. And it's definitely an opportunity for the future for this country. When you consider that we sit on the doorstep of middle-class Asia, and when I say middle-class Asia, I'm not just talking China. I'm talking about, you know, Vietnam, Indonesia, India. The fact that we sit on their doorstep, and the first thing that happens when you start to make money is you want to look after your children and you want to live longer. A lot of these countries look towards Australia for produce because they believe that it's farmed cleaner, even conventionally, quite frankly. And, you know, I think we have a big opportunity to feed Australians with organic produce to begin with and products, and bring that cost of organic down to a more affordable level for all Australians. And at the same time, with an eye to that middle-class Asia, bring products that they are prepared to pay for. And I think that it's an important aspect of, or could become a very important aspect of Australia's economic future if we get it right and we put the foundations down now.
Hmm. What do you see as some of the challenges to educate people, I guess, on the value of organic food and why they should be paying a little bit more for it, because that's what the reality is right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, someone actually said to me earlier, well, you know, you must be in a good place right now with everything that's happened. People are starting to buy more Australian made. And the reality is, we had a bit of a spike in March, but the reality is, you know, we're in a soft economy, I think, Jürgen, and quite frankly, once the government stops helping everybody or, you know, assisting people, you know, I think the reality is people buy, you know, on price. And and it's sad, you know, in some respects, because a lot of imported products come into Australia that are not made in, that, you know, have cheap labour, you know, and going back to that labour point, and I will get to your answering the question, Jürgen, but you look at Australia's labour cost. I pulled a number before of $25 an hour, and then with on costs, you know, you're getting to $30 an hour for a factory worker or a farmer, you know, labourer on a farm. In India, for example, that cost is $5 Australian a day is the cost of a factory worker in India. So when you compare that, it's a massive difference. So in order to protect the manufacturing industry, the farming industry, we need to buy Australia. It's pure and simple. But how do you explain to people that they're the differences, the choices they make, you know, makes such a profound difference on the future of the country when the costs are so much higher and potentially organic product can be, you know, in some instances, double the price. It's an education process, and it's a slow education process that everybody in the organic industry, I think, is slowly chipping away at teaching and educating people, but it's difficult, Jürgen. It's very difficult.
Mm. Yeah, I guess there's a couple of messages there to put forward. And I was thinking, you know, you mentioned in the interests of the economy and talked about the opportunity before of supplying Asia with certified organic food. And of course, that requires that the industry becomes really self-sufficient and sound and sustainable here first, because the prices in some of those countries that you mentioned for food are going to be a lot lower than they would be here as well, because people's spending power is lower. So educating people in Australia that they're supporting the industry that's going to be a long-term win for everyone in Australia is one thing, but then educating them on what are the direct benefits to you right now for buying this organic food is the other side of it, and that comes back to the price they're paying right now, doesn't it?
Yes. Because
I think I guess we're all looking for an instant win rather than thinking long term. I guess, you know, some of the behaviour we're seeing in our current COVID climate is highlighting that
in politics
for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've got to get organic products to be, you know, 10 to 15, maximum 20% more expensive than conventional is the sweet spot, I think, where the volume will exist or where the volume will grow. You know, there are a lot of instances where organic products are far higher than that, and they're only affordable to, you know, the rich and wealthy, effectively. So it is part of the job, you know, the Australian Organic Food Company's part of our mission and part of our what we have to do, frankly, is make those products more affordable. And you can only do that by creating volume. When you create volume and scale, you can start to achieve those, you know, those sort of price points. And that's why I say it's been one of the hardest things that I've ever done, because we are literally, you know, having to do things that don't, you know, we're building things that don't exist. As an example, you know, our vegetable farming network, our organic vegetable farming network, involves about 30 organic vegetable farms down the eastern seaboard, for example. And at the moment, we are or have been utilizing waste vegetables, so products that are imperfect, if you know what I mean. They don't look, you know, they don't look pretty. They're ugly. Been using those type of products, but also having to grow to order in order to be able to maintain a consistent supply chain to make soup, for example. Okay, so the next stage is to, which we're, you know, we're only about a month away, is to put a freezing line in one of the best farm locations that we have, to be able to take the waste off those 30 farms, peel it, dice it, and transform it into something that I can then bring down to flavor makers when we need it and produce it to a production plant. And that might sound simplistic, but when you're trying to, when you have to grow things in order to make the production plans work, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. So what we've done is we've bought an IQF freezer, and IQF stands for individually quick frozen. So a freezer that will individually freeze, you know, like you buy green peas in the freezer, Jürgen, that are free flowing. We're buying a freezing line, or have bought a freezing line, that will go onto the farm. It'll be actually commissioned within a month, and we'll be able to take all that waste and then turn that into something that I can then use here at Flavor Makers when we're manufacturing. Now, that will allow us to create, first of all, a supply chain ongoing. So even when Flavor Makers is not producing soup, we could be putting away product, getting ready at farm level, and effectively lower the cost of the products and bring that lowered cost to the consumer, right? So they're the type of things that we've got to do to get the numbers down to be more affordable. And then, of course, by creating that supply chain, we've then got excess product to be able to export as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I really like that example. I mean, it really comes back to finding innovative ways to look at the whole...
To get to market.
the whole journey to market from... You know, from tilling the soil to sowing the seeds to nurturing the plant and then harvesting and then bringing it to market. So I love the idea of kind of the individual freezing unit at the site.
Right now, you go to any specialist retailer that's selling organic products, and if you go to the freezer cabinets, and if you look at if they have any organic frozen product in, you know, like green peas or corn or, you know, broccoli, there's not one Australian product for sale here that's available in that format. So all of those products that are here in Australia are coming out of New Zealand or Belgium or the Netherlands. So there's an example of what, you know, what's wrong with the industry. You know, here we are importing product that's effectively grown in our backyard better than it is over there, quite frankly, and hasn't had to travel all those food miles, yet there's no infrastructure or ability to bring that to market right now because there's no way to do it. So they're the sort of things that we're, you know, I guess reiterating it again, but that's what we're trying to do. That's what the Australian Organic Food Company is about. It's about helping those those organic farmers to be able to get a little bit more for their product, but not throw product away, to be able to use that waste. And that, you know, for a farmer, that can often be the difference. What you do with that wasted product can be the profit that actually keeps you farming next year, if you know what I mean. So it's evaluating products that are being wasted, but then finding that, building that infrastructure to utilize that stuff for the future.
Yeah. Well, the other side of the supply chain, of course, is and particularly for things that don't grow year round, for things that are in season, that freezing on site, for example, gives you the ability to store it and make it available out of season.
Correct. And actually, to that point, some of the risks that Australian organic food companies taken, which I think might be worth mentioning, is that when I started this, we had a few instances where we got to the harvest season for stone fruit, for example. You know, stone fruit being nectarines, peaches, apricots, etc. And we took the risk of taking all the second grade stone fruit from all the farmers and turning it into a puree. And at the time, everybody said to me that I was, you're mad. What are you doing? You know, what are you going to do to the cash flow? And I'm like, well, the reality is the only way that I can build this is by proving to the farmers that I'm there to help. And if I could take that second grade product and I can puree it now or juice it now and hold it, and then whilst I work out what products we need to develop, that's the only way that I can start to fix the industry. So, in many respects, Flavor Makers has taken those risks, and tried to, basically cash flow the business to get to the point that we're at now. Another example, just really quickly, was I had an organic citrus farmer ring me one day, and he said, I hear you're the guy that gets things done. I said, oh, mate, maybe, what can I do for you, mate? He says, I've got 100 ton of organic navel oranges. I need a home for them. And I said, okay, I'll take them. And he said, what do you mean you'll take them? What are you going to do with them? I said, oh, mate, I don't know, but that's the only way I can fix things is by taking these risks. So that's effectively what we've been doing. You're going to make this thing happen.
All right, well, let's take a step back and talk about overall your journey in business and because you've talked about taking risks in there, and obviously starting up new businesses all the time is quite a risky thing. How did you kind of develop that appetite for risk?
I don't know. I guess my family has been in the food industry since before I was born. And I think when you, it was very common to talk about business at the dinner table. My family background's Italian, apart from eating well at the dinner table, the other part of what we did was talk business. And I think, I'm the youngest of my siblings, so, all I ever heard as a kid, and didn't really interrupt, I just listened and absorbed, was business. And I think when you grow up, and that's what you're growing, that's what you're used to, you tend to, gravitate to business, I suppose. And I there was never a doubt in my mind. I can remember arrogantly thinking to myself, I know this is going to sound ridiculous, perhaps I shouldn't mention it on the podcast, but I remember sitting in class thinking, this doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're studying, Adrian, because you're going to be a millionaire by the age of 25 anyway, because that was the sort of, that's crazy, but I think when you've grown up with business, you just gravitate towards it. And in that, inertly, there's risk, right? So it was never something that I was afraid of because I'd heard about it my entire life.
Mm. Yeah, I guess you had good models right from very young days, and a lot of people go to school and they have kind of that risk appetite or the curiosity to experiment and try things out, almost taught out of them.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, look, I'm sure that if I was born amongst accountants, I'd probably be an accountant right now. But by the way, I didn't get to make a million. I wasn't a millionaire by the age of 25. By the way.
Yeah, but your mindset was, I'm going to make this happen, right?
Yeah, tenacity, you know, and not letting, you know, not failing is a big part of it. You know, you just I was never going to stop till I got there. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
Failure was not an option.
Okay, so with all these businesses you run or have founded and started up, what are a couple of the lessons you've learnt along the way, apart from that risk is important, but, and I'm guessing it's sensible risk.
Yeah.
And failure's not an option.
So far. Yeah. Well, you know, look, you know, there's so many lessons, Jürgen, but I guess, you know, the earlier you start, I think for me, one of the lessons, you know, was if you're going to do it early, because when you're young, you don't have as many responsibilities. You don't have children to feed and put through school, et cetera. And, you know, I started the business when I was about 21, 22, I think. So I'm really grateful, you know, without a plan and, you know, fairly naively, you know, being that age was probably, you know, looking back. Because I look at a lot of people who try to start businesses later in life and it's a hell of a lot harder. You know, there's so many more risks that they have to take. So getting started early was a god, you know, was a blessing in disguise for me. But I think the most important thing in any in starting a business is belief. You know, you've got to believe in yourself, firstly, and you've got to believe and be passionate about what you want to do. Because, you know, when you talk to somebody passionately about what you believe in, it's the easiest thing. You know, people are addicted to that. You know, it's easy to sell something, you know, as an example, if you're passionate about it because you believe it, right? And that's addictive. People, you know, people want to believe. So believing in yourself and believing in what you want to do, you know, are the most important things, I think. Mm. Probably cliches, but are absolutely at the foundation of being a businessman, I think, or starting a business.
Yeah, well, that's really great advice. And in our last episode, we spoke with Linda Perry, who's a mindset coach, and that certainly was a clear message that came through there. You know, the mindset you bring really determines your success.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're going to fail. There are going to be moments where you've made the wrong decision plenty of times. And you know, clearly you don't want to play with more than you have in terms of, you know, the money that you have at your disposal. But, you know, you will make mistakes and you just got to move on. And, you know, you've got to be able to realize that you got it wrong, but also forgive yourself. And hopefully those around you that are supporting you forgive you as well. But, you know, you've just got to, you know, keep going. Because no one can ever be always right, you know? So, that's life.
Yeah, I love that. Forgive yourself is kind of the first step. And I think another thing out of that is, you know, there's a lesson, there's a gift in that failure, actually, because there's a lesson there.
Oh, always. I completely agree with that. I can't tell you the amount of times that something's failed in my life, you know, in business ideas that I've had or but I've then later looked and thought, you know, the reason I'm here today with this idea is because of that failure.
Hmm.
So as long as you're learning and you realize that everything's a learning opportunity, you know, another cliche, but it's the reality, it's the truth. You know, you can only learn from your mistakes. And if you don't, well, then you're clearly a bit silly. But, you know, I think all of those things are important and you need to have a good support crew around you, people who you know, because you need to be picked up sometimes. You need people to go, hey, it's okay, man, you're doing a great job, you know.
Hmm.
So I've been very fortunate to have people like that around me. So, you know, that's been a big part. And luck, Jürgen, you've got to have some luck too. A lot of hard work that you need, you know, there's a major element in being successful as a business person, and luck, I wouldn't discount that one. It's important as well.
Well, yeah, but I think you might be doing yourself a little bit of an injustice there by sort of saying luck. I think who was it that said, and I can't remember the exact saying, but kind of luck is where good preparation meets opportunity or something like that.
Look, you're right, and I can understand why you say that. But I think looking back on, you know, things that have happened in my life, you know, I've been lucky enough to pick the right moment. And I don't want to discount it because I think, you know, too many people in life that have been successful business people tend to become very arrogant about the fact that they're just smart or they're smarter than others. And I, you know, I don't think that I'm smarter than others. I think that I might have had the right idea at the right time and I might have met the right person. You know, there's an element of luck, you know, and anybody that's successful who discounts that, I think is kidding themselves. You know? That's sort of what I wanted to say about it. If you understand.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think an element of humility and self-reflection is really important. And that's important in, you know, we were talking about mistakes and learning from them. So I think an element of humility there, but also forgiveness and taking on board feedback is really important. So, yeah.
I agree.
Okay, well, this is fascinating, Adrian. I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and there are probably some questions more related to your general business experience than specifically the food industry, but the questions are designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So there's five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some insightful answers that'll inspire our audience to go and do something awesome as a result today.
I hope so. I hope I get them right.
No wrong answers here. What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Read, research, be aware of trends that are happening around you, my opinion. Mm.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And, you know, we were talking with the last couple of guests about curiosity there, which comes into that as well. And I think, you know, what we were talking about earlier about luck, I think it was a read and the research and being aware of trends is really part of that preparation that where you can capture opportunities then.
Absolutely. You know, I spend most of my days reading internet blogs and you know, research websites around food to find or to pick what's coming next. You know, I think it's a big part of it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Learn how to cook. Because, well, I'm in the food industry, right? And a lot of these things are specific to what I've, you know, I guess, in life. But, you know, to understand food basics for me and understanding the building blocks of how food is developed has been a big part of my success in understanding how things work together. I have a great deal of, I have a bunch of chefs and food technologists that work for me. If I don't understand what they're talking about, I can't be relevant. You know what I mean? For me, learning how to cook, being in the food industry and understanding the basics of cooking, those basic building blocks have been really important for me.
Mm, great. Well, I think with growing up in an Italian family, isn't that mandatory?
Absolutely, yeah. No, it is. Yeah. But, you know, like I can now, you know, boast that I understand Indian cooking, I understand Asian cooking, I understand all of those things. And interestingly, there are, of course, patterns in all of those cuisines. And once you know those, once you know what those building blocks are, you can cook just about anything. So understanding all that helps me help the team here when we're trying to develop new ideas and new flavors of cuisines, or, you know, it's a big part of what I do with the team.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. I love the idea, sort of understanding the patterns behind how food is prepared and how recipes are put together.
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating. I find it really fascinating too. So, look, I love food's my life.
All right. So do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
The internet. How broad is that, Jürgen? To be honest, it probably, the reason I say that and not give you a more specific answer is because I have had brain surgery, I wear an eye patch, and I have very little lateral movement in my the eye that I use, left or right, the eye doesn't really move. So my life's very visual these days. It's harder to read. So I spend a lot of time, you know, I guess, jumping around the internet, you know, specific readings are difficult for me. So I don't really have a, you know, one reference point that I can share.
Well, it's great that we've got that tool at our disposal today, isn't it? And there's so many options there that, you know, we can kind of have audio books if we're in a, you know, if someone does have difficulty reading like you do at the moment, then audio books, video, listening to videos, there's so much.
Amazing. So much there. Exactly.
Okay. Now, what's the best way to keep a client or a project on track?
Communication. Pretty simple. You know, if you aren't talking to your customers and telling them what's going on, then you've got something to hide. If you've got nothing to hide, and you shouldn't, clear communication is the way to keep any project on track. Simple.
Yeah. Great advice. And sometimes even nothing to report
is enough.
Is enough. Yeah, that's right. No, nothing's happened. Everything's gone along swimmingly.
Yeah. Telling someone that you've received their email sometimes is enough, you know.
Yeah. All right. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Dye their hair purple. I think that always you know, that's a good question. I don't know that I have, you know, an answer for that. I think that to stand out in the world of business today, it's innovation. Like, you know, you've got to be innovative. I mean, everything gets commoditized. So if you don't bring something innovative to the table, then, you know, I fear that you're not going to get that cut through, you know. Anybody can make something, well, not everybody, but, you know, dropping prices is one way to enter a market, but coming up with something that's innovative and different and that changes the way people think, that's the answer, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
And dyeing your hair purple.
And dyeing your hair purple, yeah. Or if you're comfortable with that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if you have hair, which...
Yeah, well, there's that too. Yeah, no,
okay. Yeah. All right. So thanks, Adrian. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you and about your Australian Organic Food Company and your other businesses, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared with us today?
Well, I'm available on my email, which is acester at flavormakers.com.au. Cester is spelt with a C, so C-E-S-T-E-R. But, you know, all of the websites that we're involved in or the businesses that we're involved in have a contacts page, and, you know, it'll get to me if someone wants to write to me. So the Australian Organic, our website for Australian Organic is australianorganic.com, and, you know, the other businesses, including Passage to India or Passage Foods, you know, if you go to any of those websites, you'll be able to get to me.
All right. Well, and we'll list those in the links inside the show notes as well.
Thank you again.
So do you have any parting advice for our listener today?
I think, you know, another thing that's been a big part of my life has been to be optimistic. You know, there's too much negativity in this world. There's too, and it's everywhere you look, whether it's the news, you know, there's nothing positive, and it's sad. I think it's really, really sad. And I think I'm not Bill Gates, you know, I've got a successful business. I'm very fortunate to have got to where I am today with great people around me. But if I wasn't optimistic and if I didn't believe in, you know, the glass being half full rather than half empty, I don't think I would have got here. And I'm not saying that being negative's, you know, a bad thing. I just think that you've got to believe, you know, you've got to believe in the best, that anything's achievable, and that optimism is an undervalued trait or character, you know, trait.
Mm. Yeah, I think I agree with you. You know, there's lots of negativity around, and particularly, I mean, we're sort of right in the middle of a second wave of the coronavirus here in Victoria, and there's plenty of bad news around, but I think we need to look beyond that and say, okay, that is the situation we're in, but it's going to get better, and what can we do to get better? So I think that's
and we live in Australia, like, you know, at the end of the day, we're so fortunate to be in this country.
Yes, that's right. You know, it could be compared to what, countries that's got hundreds of thousands of deaths.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a count of lucky stars for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, finally, Adrian, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
I haven't really thought about that question, Jürgen. There is a number of incredible up and coming disruptors in the industry right now, in the food industry anyway. There's a young guy called Kjetil Hansen, who I think is doing incredible things. With an online business in the plant-based space. There's also a guy called Michael Fox who's got a business in that plant-based space as well, who's you know, a great innovator and disruptor. You know, I think those guys would be well worth tapping on the shoulder and having a chat to.
All right. Well, we'll reach out to them and get them on the show. So thanks, Adrian. And thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. I've really enjoyed this immensely, learned a lot about organic food and some more about the wider food industry, but more importantly, about your whole mindset and attitude to business. So I'm sure that there's some wonderful insights here for our listener, and I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, and thank you for listening. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Adrian and took something away from what he shared with us today. I think Adrian's a little modest when he talks about luck and its role in his business success. But I think he revealed the secret when he said that he reads, researches, and always keeps abreast of the trends in his industry and elsewhere. So he's always prepared to take action when opportunities present themselves. I'd love to know what you took away from Adrian's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Adrian Cester. That is AdrianCester. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Adrian Cester. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Adrian there, as well as links to the Australian Organic Food Company website, his other business websites, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Adrian suggested that we have a conversation with Michael Fox of the Fable Food Company and Kjetil Hansen, founder of Delishu, on future Innova Buzz podcast episodes. So Michael and Kjetil, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Adrian Cester. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including John Howe, author of The Foolish Corner, and Mark Schaefer, author of Marketing Rebellion. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.